Half an hour later, Smoke, Cal, and Lenny were in front of Sheriff Monte Carson's office in Big Rock. Smoke dismounted and handed the reins of his horse to Cal.
Cal, how about you go with Lenny to get his horse turned back in at delivery? Then get your horses boarded until we come back. I'm going to have a few words with the sheriff.
Sally also dismounted and handed the reins of her horse to Cal.
Sally, you get our tickets and send a telegram to Pearly to let him know we're coming.
No, sir, don't do that.
Why not?
If you send a telegram directly to Pearly, like as not, he'll never see it. The marshal will get it and keep it from him. What you ought to do, if you want to send him a telegram, is send it to my ma.
You're right. Yeah, that's probably a good idea. All right, send it to Lenny's ma.
Smoke took a piece of paper from his pocket.
And send this telegram to Mr. Murchison in Colorado Springs. I'm asking him to represent Pearly and to meet us when our train comes through Colorado Springs.
I'm sure he will. He was such a nice man and seemed so eager to help.
Yes, well, there's a difference between what he did for us last time and what I'm asking him to do for us now. I'm not sure how anxious he'll be. But if he can't do it, perhaps he can recommend someone who can.
I'll take care of it.
As Sally, Cal, and Lenny set about their business, Smoke stepped into the sheriff's office where he saw Sheriff Carson standing with his back to the door, pouring two cups of coffee.
I saw you outside. Figured you'd be coming in here for something. So we may as well talk about it over coffee.
Monty handed the cup to Smoke.
Thanks.
What is it? What's up?
Do you know anything about the town of Santa Clara?
I know a little about it. Why you ask?
I'm afraid that Pearly got himself into a bit of trouble over there.
Oh? I didn't even know Pearly was back.
He's not. But from what I gather, he was coming back when he got into a shooting scrape.
Tell me about it.
According to Lenny York, the young man who brought us the news, Pearly was just passing through. He stopped in town for a meal and a drink and a friendly card game. Only the card game wasn't all that friendly. And Pearly got into an argument with one of the players. A few moments later, same man tried to shoot Pearly in the back with a shotgun. Pearly had no choice but to kill him.
That's what happened. Sounds pretty much like self-defense to me.
Yes, you would think so, wouldn't you? But it turns out that the man Pearly killed was Billy Ray Quinton, Poe Quinton's son. Now, I met the Quintons, both of them, at the cattle auction in Colorado Springs recently. And I must say, I didn't care much for either one of them.
Well, from what I've heard of the Quintons, I don't blame you for not liking them.
Now, here's the problem. Lenny York, the young man who brought us the news, says that the marshal of the town is pretty much in Poe Quinton's camp.
Your friend is right. The marshal does work for him. His name is Clem Dawson.
Do you know Dawson?
I've met him once or twice. He's from Kansas. From what I heard, he was a pretty good sheriff at one time, but got into some trouble with bounty money while he was there. Story was he had a private army of bounty hunters working for him. Supposedly, Dawson would give them leads on wanted men, and the bounty hunters would bring back bodies. There was never a live prisoner, mind you, just bodies. Dawson and his bounty hunters would then split the reward money. Of course, that was just a story that was going around about him. They were never able to prove anything. But the decent citizens of the county had the good sense to turn him out the next election. Sometime after that, he turned up in Santa Clara as their town marshal.
Did the townspeople of Santa Clara not know about his past?
I doubt they knew about him, at least not at first. They may know more about him now, but it doesn't make any difference. Quentin not only owns the marshal, he owns most of the town, literally.
Why doesn't the county do something about it?
Smoke, you know how big a man you are around here.
I'm just a...
Don't give me that. You are the biggest man in these parts, and you know it. The whole county looks up to you and would do anything you ask them to. Well, sir, as big a man as you are here, that's how big Quentin is in Hereno County. But the difference is, the folks here who look up to you would do anything you ask of them because they like you, and they know you're a good man. It's different with Quentin. As far as I can tell, nobody likes the son of a bitch because he is an evil man. I don't know that he's done anything that the law can actually get him for, but he has certainly come close. And the reason everyone in Santa Clara will do anything he asks is because they're just flat out scared of him.
I see.
Marshal Dawson has Pearly in jail, does he?
I'm afraid he does.
And my advice to you, my friend, is for you to get down there as quickly as you can. But unless I miss my guess, you don't need any advice from me. If I were a betting man, I'd say you're on your way right now.
Yes. Sally's getting the tickets. I better get on my way. Thanks for the information about Dawson. Thanks for the coffee.
Good luck, my friend.
Let me get this straight, Mr. Quinton. The marshal wants me to build a gallows right in the middle of Front Street? Last time I built one, it was in the alley behind the jail. Are you sure the marshal wants this thing built in the middle of the street?
The speaker was Walter Guthrie, Santa Clara's one and only carpenter.
It doesn't make any difference where the marshal wants a gallows built. I'm the one paying for it, and I want it built in the middle of Front Street. I want everyone in town to be able to watch when we hang the man that killed my boy.
How do you know we're going to hang him? According to what I've read in the paper and what I've heard said about it from some that was there, this here trial might not at all be a clear case. Fact is, they're saying it was self-defense.
It was murder, pure and simple. For everyone who might say it was self-defense, I can get two who'll be willing to say it was murder.
Uh-huh. Who can actually say it, or just be willing to say it?
What difference does that make? One is as good as another. Now, are you going to build the gallows, or am I going to have to get someone else to do it?
No need for you to get anyone else. You pay me the money, I'll build anything you want, anywhere you want.
Guthrie took $100 from his billfold.
Is this enough to get it built?
Mr. Quinn, for this much money, I'll build a gallows that anybody'd be proud to swing from.
Get started on it.
That evening, Kathleen went to the marshal's office to drop off some food for Pearlie.
Ms. York, you got no business being here.
Your prisoner has to eat, Marshal Dawson.
Yes, ma'am, I reckon so. But you didn't have to bring it over yourself. I could have sent my deputy over to get the food.
Yes, well, there is a little problem with you sending your deputy for the food.
Really? And what problem would that be?
It seems that not all the food makes it back to the jail when Mr. Wilson comes for it.
Well, now you have to admit that is your own fault there, Ms. York. Truth to tell, if you wasn't such a good cook, Wilson wouldn't be pilfering the food as he brings it over. What are you feeding him tonight?
Kathleen neither answered nor offered to show him what she was bringing, so Dawson removed the cloth cover himself. When he did, he saw two pieces of fried chicken, mashed potatoes, gravy, corn, and biscuits. There was also a piece of apple pie, upon which had been melted a slice of cheese.
Well now, Ms. York, that is some dinner.
This is leftovers from my special over at the cafe tonight.
Well, that may be. But I know damn well the town ain't paying you enough meal money for a prisoner to eat like that. What are you planning on doing? Sticking us with a higher bill later on?
No need. The city pays 10 cents for the meal. I won't charge you a penny more.
Well, then I don't understand. Why the feast?
From what I understand, the poor man is going to be hung when the judge arrives.
Yes, ma'am, you understand that right. Soon as Judge McCabe gets here, we'll hold the trial, then we'll hang him, probably that same day. I reckon you've seen that they're building gallows out front.
Yes, I saw it as I walked by. I don't know why you decided to build it right in the middle of Front Street. That is a little gruesome, if you ask me.
Well, it may be. But that's where Mr. Quentin wanted it built.
And you do everything Mr. Quentin tells you to do?
Well, let's be fair here, Ms. York. After all, it was Quentin's boy who was murdered, and he's the one paying for the scaffold, not the town. So I reckon he can have the prisoner hung just about anywhere he wants to.
Aren't you getting ahead of yourself? The jury hasn't found the young man guilty.
The jury ain't found him guilty, you say?
That's what I said.
Well, the thing is, Ms. York, that's just what you might call a technicality. I know you didn't come to Billy Ray's burying, but if you had come, why, you would have heard Pogue warning everyone that might serve on a jury that they better find this murder guilty.
That isn't right. You can't order someone to find a person guilty. There has to be a trial. The jury has to listen to the case and weigh all the evidence before they can decide guilt or innocence.
You know all about juries, do you?
I know what is right and what is wrong.
Yeah. Well, don't worry about it. This fellow's as guilty as sin, and everyone in town knows that. So there ain't no way the jury won't find him guilty, no matter whether Quentin ordered them to or not.
I know two people who say that Billy Ray fired first.
Oh, yeah? Who's that?
My son, for one, and Mary Lou Culpepper, for another.
Mary Lou Culpepper? The whore? And you believe her?
I do. Especially when my son tells the same story.
Yes, ma'am. Well, that don't mean much, seeing as everyone in town knows your son is stuck on that whore. But I reckon when you get right down to it, we're going to have to go with the evidence, the other eyewitness accounts, and the prisoner's own confession.
Confession?
Yes, ma'am. When I asked if he was the one that killed him, why, he said flat out that he was. And there wasn't nobody in the saloon what didn't hear him say that.
But that isn't an admission of guilt. Didn't he also say that Billy Ray shot first? That it was in self-defense?
Well, he may have, but the thing is, Miss York, that kind of thing ain't mine to decide. That's for the court to decide. All I got to go on is the man who said he killed him, which is my prisoner, and Billy Ray's body, which is dead.
Marshal Dawson reached for the biscuit, but Kathleen pulled it back.
This food is for the prisoner.
Well, then you better get it to him before it gets all cold.
Kathleen took the tray back to the cell.
Lenny asked me to make certain you get enough to eat.
As Lenny had before, she handed each dish through the bars to him before turning the tray on its side and sliding it through.
Whooey, I tell you the truth. Yes, ma'am. It's almost worth being put in jail here if I'm going to get to eat like this.
Oh, don't be foolish, young man. I appreciate the compliment, but nothing is worth being in jail for.
You must be Lenny's sister.
Oh, I'm his mother.
You don't say. Well, all I can say is you must have had him when you was about 12 or something. Sure don't look like you're old enough to be his mother.
Well, that's very kind of you.
Have you heard from Lenny?
Indirectly. Your friend Mr. Jensen sent this telegram this afternoon.
Why did he send it to you?
I expect he sent it to me, so you would be sure to get it. If he had sent it directly to the marshal, you might never even see it.
Yeah, I don't know much about this marshal, but I think you might be right.
Kathleen pushed the telegram through the bars and, making sure he wasn't being watched, Pearly took it.
Lenny York has told us of your troubles, Pearly. Stop. We are on our way to take care of it. Stop. Keep up your spirits. Stop. Smoke.
Thank you, Pete.
Quentin took a paper from the telegrapher.
This telegram is from Smoke Jensen, you say?
Yes, sir, Mr. Quentin.
Well, now, what do you know about that? Smoke Jensen, huh?
Do you know Mr. Jensen?
Oh, yes, I know him. I met him in Colorado Springs during the cattle auction.
I understand he's quite well known throughout the state.
So I have been led to believe. I must say, he did not make a very good impression on me. What I'm wondering is, why would he be sending a telegram to the man who murdered my son?
Evidently they're friends, as you'll see when you read the telegram.
Quentin read the telegram, then looked up.
I wonder what he means by take care of it.
I beg your pardon?
His telegram says he's on his way to take care of it. I was just wondering what he meant by that.
Oh, I couldn't hazard a guess as to what he might mean by that, Mr. Quentin. I just thought you might want to see the telegram, that's all.
Yes, Pete. You were quite right in bringing it to me, and I thank you. If you get any more telegrams you think I might find interesting, please bring them to me as well.
Of course I will, Mr. Quentin. I'm always glad to help out an outstanding citizen like yourself, even though I'm taking a great personal risk in doing so. I'm sure that you realize it's a violation of the law to show private telegrams to anyone other than the person to whom the telegram's addressed, and a punishment for violating that law is quite severe.
Yes, yes, I understand.
Quentin withdrew a $10 bill from his billfold and handed it to Pete.
The fact that you are sharing certain telegrams with me will never go beyond this point.
Very good, sir. You know, Mr. Quentin, I didn't mention it, but the telegram was not sent directly to the prisoner. Not even to the marshal.
It wasn't. Who was it sent to?
It was sent to Kathleen York.
Well now, that is interesting. Why would it be sent there?
I expect it's because young Lenny York spoke up for this fellow Pearly right after the shooting. And later, he seemed to get real friendly with him while he was in jail.
Yes. Well, after I take care of the man who murdered my son, I'll take care of Lenny York.
I'm sorry about your son, sir.
Thank you.
Quentin followed Pete out onto the front porch of his large house, then watched as the thin, bespectacled telegrapher climbed into a Surrey, picked up the reins, and drove away. The truth was, Quentin had not been all that shocked over the fact that his son had been killed. Billy Ray was an unmitigated horse's ass, and Quentin knew it. The real surprise was that nobody had shot him before now. But that didn't matter. Now it was a matter of power. If he did not make the killer of his son pay, it would be a sign of weakness. He smiled. The fact that the one who killed his son was a friend of Smoke Jensen just made his play sweeter. He would be able to kill two birds with one stone. Before Quentin went back into the house, he looked over toward the stable and saw his foreman talking to a couple of his hands.
Cole!
Yes, sir, Mr. Quentin?
Come over here.
Cole Mathers, a big, bearded man with a wandering eye, walked over toward Quentin.
I want you to run an errand for me.
All right.
I want you to go over to a place called La Vida. There you'll find a man named Cates. Tell him I want to hire him.
Cates? Wait a minute. Are you talking about Snake Cates?
Some people might call him Snake Cates, but I wouldn't if I were you. Leastwise, not to his face. His real name is Bogardus.
Bogardus? Damn if I wouldn't prefer to be called Snake.
You will call him Mister, if you know what's good for you.
Oh, don't get me wrong, Mr. Quentin. I may be dumb, but I ain't that dumb. No, sir. When I get around a fella like Snake Cates, I'll be calling him Mister for sure. He's got, what, 17, 18 men that he's killed?
Something like that.
And every one of them has been in a face-to-face shootout. I mean, he ain't got no easy kills in all them gunfights. No easy kills at all.
Just find him and bring him here.
Mr. Quentin, he's gonna ask for money.
Give him $100. What is it?
Well, sir, for somebody like me, $100 is a lot of money. I reckon I'd do pert nigh anything for $100. But for somebody like Snake Cates, $100 wouldn't be nothing.
The $100 is just to get him to come speak with me. Tell him that I guarantee that we'll come to an agreement that he will find satisfactory.
All right.
Oh, and Cole?
Yes, sir?
If you can't find him, or if for some reason you can't persuade him to come back with you, don't bother to come back.
Oh, I'll find him, Mr. Quentin, and I'll bring him back.
What are you doing here?
Deputy Wilson spoke when Mary Lou Culpepper came into the marshal's office.
I've brought food for Mr. Purley.
What the hell is it with this man? Have the Yorks taken him to raise? Oh, first Lenny came by to feed him, then his mama, and now his whore. You are Lenny's whore, aren't you?
I'm his friend.
His whore friend, you mean? Oh, all right. Go ahead. Take the food to him. Only next time you come here, you better bring a little extra for me. Otherwise, I'll eat whatever you brung him. And go on. Take his food to him. Only don't you be giving him anything more than food back there, if you know what I mean.
Thank you.
Mary Lou walked quickly to the cells at the back of the office, as much to get away from Wilson as for any other reason. Because it was late in the day and the filtered light coming through the window was weak, the shadows reached into the three cells. For a moment, Mary Lou saw no one.
Mr. Purley.
Oh, it's just Purley.
I brought you your supper.
If I stay here long enough, I'm liable to get fat. That is, if I don't hang first.
Oh, you mustn't say that. It's bad luck.
You're Lenny's friend, aren't you? I saw you in the saloon on the day it happened.
Yes.
Well, Lenny's a very lucky man.
Y'all, we aren't that kind of friends. Besides, someone as fine as Lenny, I mean, he plays a piano and all, could never really be that kind of friends with someone like me. Maybe you don't know it, but I'm a whore.
Like I said, Lenny is a very lucky man to have a friend like you.
The two young men stopped in front of the Ace High Saloon, dismounted, and looped the reins around the hitching rail.
Come on, Ken, let's get something to wet down our gullets. Then we'll get us a bath and a bottle and find some place to have a real good dinner.
And a couple of women. Let's don't forget to get us a couple of women.
You want to spend all the money we stole in one night, are you?
Why not? As easy as the money was to get, we can always get some more. Did you see how that old fart shook when we told him we was robbing him?
Come on, let's get a couple of beers.
The two men stepped into the saloon, then stopped for a moment to have a look around. The saloon was busy, but not crowded. There were several empty tables and several empty spots along the bar. One of the men standing at the bar was Cole Mathers, and he paid little attention to the two men as they came in.
Want to stand at the bar or sit at a table?
Yeah, let's sit at a table.
Oh, that ain't good.
What ain't good?
That's Mr. Cates' table them two boys took. And Mr. Cates, he don't like nobody else sitting at it.
Cole turned to look toward the two young men. Shortly after they sat down, both Ken and Jerry noticed that the hum of normal conversation had ended, and it grew quite quiet in the saloon. And the sudden quiet did not seem to be a mere coincidence, as it soon became evident that everyone in the house was looking directly at their table.
Hey, you! What is it you're looking at?
How do you know he's even looking at us? Yeah, one of his eyes looks one way and the other looks the other. I bet he don't even know his own self what he's looking at.
Cole turned away from the two.
Oh, now you done gone and hurt his feelings.
Jared and looked around the saloon and saw that nearly everyone in the room was looking at them.
What the hell are you people all looking at?
Maybe they heard of us. This here wasn't the first job we pulled. Could be we're getting to be famous.
Yeah, that's probably it. Barkeep, how about a couple beers over here?
And I'll have the same.
The bartender ignored the request.
Hey, what the hell? Ain't you want our business?
Not until you two galoots change tables, I don't.
Change tables? What do you mean, change tables? This here's the table we want.
It ain't gonna be the table you want when he comes in.
When who comes in?
When he comes in.
Don't be a fool, mister. If you knowed who it was you was talking to, you wouldn't be talking like that. Me and my friend here have killed men for less than that. Now, if you don't want to make us mad, believe me, barkeep, that ain't something you want to do. You bring us them beers like we asked.
Before the bartender could respond, another patron pushed his way through the batwing doors of the saloon. He wasn't a very big man. In fact, he was quite small. No taller than 5'2" and weighing no more than 130 pounds. He was dressed in black, except for a tooled leather pistol belt that bristled with filled cartridge loops. His eyes were small and dark, so dark that there was no delineation between the iris and pupils. He also wore a neatly trimmed mustache. He took a couple of steps toward the table, then stopped when he saw that it was occupied. He looked toward the bartender.
It ain't my fault. I told them I wasn't going to serve them as long as they were sitting at your table.
I would invite you gentlemen to find another table.
What's that you say? Damn, mister, are you so little you ain't got a voice enough to speak up? You sound like a mouse pissing on a ball of cotton. How the hell is anyone supposed to hear you?
You know what I think this little pissant just said? I think he invited us to find another table.
Is that a fact? Well, we was here first, mister, so we invite you to find another table. Unless you want us to mop up the floor with your skinny little ass.
So, are you telling me you are willing to fight for that table?
You want to throw this litter feller out, or shall I?
Oh, I don't believe in physical violence. That never settles anything.
He don't believe in physical violence. This ball has started, so either we finish this now or you can just go get yourself another table and mind your own damn business.
Oh, we are going to finish it.
We are we? I tell you what, mister, since you're all hell-bent on doing this, you can choose whichever one of us you want to fight.
I intend to fight both of you.
Both of us?
At the same time. Only, let's make it permanent.
What do you mean by, let's make it permanent?
What I mean is, leave that table right now or stay where you are and draw your guns.
Draw our guns? Mister, there are two of us and only one of you. And I don't mind telling you that we ain't exactly strangers when it comes to using guns. Neither one of us can kill you where you stand. But you say you want to fight both of us at the same time? Are you sure you want to go through with this?
I'm sure.
Both Ken and Jerry stood, then they stepped away from each other.
All right, before we do this, I want everyone in this here saloon to understand what is going on. Me and my partner wasn't doing nothing but just sitting all peaceful-like at this table when this little pissant come in here challenged us to a gunfight. Y'all understand that? When the sheriff comes in after we kill this fella, I want to make sure everyone knows we didn't start it.
All right, mister. We'll all be willing to testify that Mr. Cates challenged you to a fight when you refused to move from his table.
Mr. Cates? What do you mean, Cates? Is your name Cates?
It is.
Snake Cates?
I don't like that name. I prefer to be called Mr. Cates.
Ken, what have you gotten us into?
Look, Mr. Cates, we didn't mean nothing by all this. If you want your table, you can have it. We just didn't have no idea it was your table.
It's too late for negotiations now. Like you said, you brought me to the ball. Now I expect a dance.
But I didn't know!
Ain't no use trying to talk us out of it now, Ken. This little feller's bound to go through with us. We don't have no choice in the matter. We're either gonna have to kill him, or he's gonna kill us.
Now!
The bartender drew a mug of beer.
Here's your beer, Mr. Cates.
Cates took his beer and went and sat at his table. A short time later, the undertaker came and dragged the bodies out. Then the sheriff came in. He looked over at Cates, who sat playing solitaire.
We're shooting like this, I don't suppose I have to ask who did it, do I?
No one responded.
Anybody know these two boys?
I never saw either one of them before today. Do you know?
No, I don't. Anybody see what happened?
Nobody responded.
Come on, there are what, 10 of you here? 10 of you in a room no bigger than this, but none of you saw anything?
I saw it.
Well, finally I get someone who isn't blind. All right, mister, tell me. What did you see?
Looked to me like the two men Mr. Cates killed had something they wanted to prove.
Something to prove? What do you mean by that?
I don't know. Maybe they wanted to prove that they weren't scared of Mr. Cates or something. I mean, I can't think of any other reason why they would have wanted to goad him into a gunfight.
Wait a minute. Are you telling me these two men goaded Cates?
That's what I'm saying.
How'd they do that?
Well, first they sat at his table. And when they were asked, real friendly-like by the bartender here, to change tables, they didn't do it.
Go on.
And then when Mr. Cates asked him if they would mind changing tables, and he asked them just as friendly as the bartender did, well, they challenged him to a fight.
The two men challenged Cates?
That's right. I reckon they thought that being as there was two of them, they could beat him.
Anyone in here see it any different than that?
No, Sheriff. If you ask me, I'd say that's just the way it happened.
Oh, that's so? How come none of you spoke up when I asked you?
Well, I was just fixing to speak up when this fella did.
Mr. Cates, I don't know how much longer you're planning on staying in La Vida, but I'll be one happy fella when you leave.
Cates took a drink of his beer and stared at the sheriff, but he said nothing. Cole did not join in any of the conversations, but waited for a few minutes before he walked over to Cates' table. He stood there for a moment, expecting Cates to look up, but Cates didn't look up.
If you're thinking I owe you something for what you said to the sheriff, you are wrong. I don't owe you nothing.
Cole put a $100 bill on the table in front of him. Cates picked the bill up, examined it for a moment, then, for the first time since Cole approached the table, looked up at him.
What is this for?
To get your attention.
All right, you got my attention. What do you want?
The man I work for would like to hire you.
For $100? I don't do much for $100.
No, sir. Like I said, the $100 is just to get your attention. Mr. Quentin guarantees that the two of you will come to an agreement that you will find satisfactory.
How satisfactory?
I don't know. I'm only telling you what Mr. Quentin told me to tell you.
Is Quentin rich? Because I don't come cheap.
Oh, Mr. Quentin is very rich.
With his leg under the table, Cates pushed one of the chairs out.
Have a seat. Tell me about this man, Quentin.
Smoke, Sally, Cal, and Lenny had a one-hour layover in Denver where they were to change trains. As they waited in the depot, Smoke walked over to a window under a sign that read, Western Union.
Yes, sir. Do you wish to send a telegram?
No. I hope I have one here waiting for me. Would you check your will call box?
I'll do that. And you would be...
Jensen. Smoke Jensen.
Ah, yes. Indeed, Mr. Jensen. You do have a telegram waiting for you. I recall getting it last night.
Walking back over to the table on which the telegraph instrument sat, the Western Union clerk rifled through a pile of papers and envelopes before coming up with one. He checked the name on the outside, then brought the envelope back up to the front window and passed it through the opening to Smoke.
What do I owe you?
Not a thing, sir. It has already been paid for.
This was a response to the telegram Sally had sent before they left Big Rock. In the telegram, he had not only asked Murchison to represent Pearlie, he had also asked Murchison to respond by telegram to the Denver and Rio Grande Railroad Depot in Denver with instructions to the telegraph office to hold the telegram in the will call box. Smoke took the envelope back over to where Sally and the others were waiting.
What does he say?
I don't know. I haven't read it yet.
Smoke, what if he won't do it? What will we do?
If Murchison can't or won't, we'll just have to find a lawyer who will do it.
Smoke opened the envelope, removed the telegram, read it, smiled, then handed it to Sally.
For whatever value you place upon my ability to help, I hereby place my humble skills in your service. Stop! I will meet you at the depot in Colorado Springs. Stop!
Murchison saw Smoke and Sally as soon as they stepped down from the train, and he smiled at them as he waited for them to approach him.
Hello, Tom. I want to thank you for answering my telegram.
I'm glad to do it. And as I said in my telegram, did you get my telegram, by the way?
Yes, I picked it up in Denver.
Good. As I said in my telegram, I am willing to do anything you want. But listen, Smoke, are you sure you want me for this? I'm not sure I'm the best one for the job. After all, this is a criminal case.
Pearlie ain't no criminal.
This is Pearlie's friend, Cal. Of course, he's our friend, too.
Cal, the fact that someone's case is a criminal case doesn't necessarily mean the person being tried is a criminal. It is just a means of differentiating civil from criminal court proceedings. And I'm sure you know that under our system of jurisprudence, the accused is presumed to be innocent.
Innocent? Yeah, that's what Pearlie is, all right.
Why do you seem so hesitant, Tom?
Because I am not what you would call a criminal lawyer.
Have you ever tried a criminal case?
Yes, of course I have, but it has been a long time since I did, so I just wanted you to be aware of that, so if you want to, you would have time to find another lawyer.
Are you willing to take the case?
Am I willing? Well, yes, I'm more than willing. To be honest, I must say that I find the idea of trying such a case again intriguing. But the fact that I consider you a friend, and this case involves a friend of yours, does make it a bit intimidating.
Let me put it another way. If Pearlie is innocent, and I take Lenny's word for it that he is, do you feel confident that you can do a good job for him?
Lenny's word.
This is Lenny.
Smoke indicated the young man who had initially hung back.
Lenny was there when it happened. He saw everything. He is going to be our star witness.
Well, it helps to have a witness. But to answer your question, yes, I am confident I can do a good job for him.
You're going to get him off?
I certainly intend to make every effort to get him off. Tell me, Lenny, how did you happen to see this? Were you with Pearlie when this happened?
No, sir. I wasn't exactly what you would call with him. To be honest, I didn't even know who he was then. I just happened to be in the saloon when it happened, and I saw it all.
You don't know Pearlie?
No, sir. Well, I know him now, because I talked to him after they put him in jail, but I didn't know him before all this happened.
Is that a problem, Mr. Murchison? I mean, is it a problem that Lenny didn't know Pearlie?
No, quite the contrary. It is good. The fact that they didn't know each other before will give more weight to Lenny's statement. If they had known each other, the prosecutor could taint Lenny's testimony by suggesting that it was being given to help his friend.
Let's get back on board. We'll continue the conversation there.
Smoke and the others reboarded the train, then returned to their original seats. Smoke and Sally sat facing forward, while Murchison and Lenny sat in the rear-facing seat across from them. Cal found an empty seat just on the opposite side of the aisle from Smoke and Sally. As they started rolling out of the station, the conductor came through the car punching tickets. Murchison waited until the train was well underway before he turned to Lenny.
Now, Lenny, as best as you can remember, I want you to tell me exactly what you saw.
I saw Billy Ray Quentin come busting into the saloon with a shotgun, and he shot at Pearlie. And even though Pearlie managed to jump to one side just before Billy Ray fired, he got hit by some of the shotgun pellets anyway.
Pearlie got hit? You didn't tell us that.
Oh, well, there ain't really nothing to worry about on that score, ma'am. He was hurt hardly none at all. And Doc Urban, he's a friend of mine. Well, actually, he's a friend of my ma's. He took the shot out and fixed Pearlie up real good.
So Pearlie saw Billy Ray coming after him with his shotgun and managed to jump out of the way in time to avoid getting killed. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, sir. But Billy Ray, well, he raised up his shotgun and was about to shoot again. That's when Pearlie shot him.
As you can see, Tom, it sounds like a clear case of self-defense.
If there is one thing I've learned in all the years I've been a lawyer, Smoke, it's that there's no such thing as a clear case of anything.
Well, you know what I mean.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I don't mean to be too hard on you. I'm just trying to fill you in on some facts. Where did this take place?
In the New York.
What? In New York?
The New York. It's a saloon in Santa Clara. I play piano there.
Did the shooting take place inside the saloon?
Yes.
Now, how many others were in the saloon at the time?
Oh, I'm not sure exactly. I'd say about 20.
20 people saw the shooting?
Yes, sir.
Maybe I was wrong. With 20 eyewitnesses, this very well could be a clear-cut case.
There won't none of the others testify.
I won't be able to get anyone else to testify. Why not?
Like I said, the name of the man that got killed was Billy Ray Quentin. He is, that is, he was, Pogue Quentin's son. And I don't reckon that there are many people in town who would be willing to go up against Pogue Quentin.
I have met Pogue Quentin. And I find it hard to believe that someone like Pogue Quentin would actually have that many friends down in Santa Clara.
Oh, don't get me wrong, Mr. Murchison. It's not because they are his friends that they won't testify. It's because they're afraid of him.
Yes, I must say, that sounds more like the Pogue Quentin I met. He struck me then as someone who would attempt to get his way by intimidation.
Intimidation? Does that mean scaring people?
Yes.
Well, he doesn't scare me. I will testify.
Are you the only one?
Well, I'm pretty sure you can get Mary Lou Culpepper to testify, but I don't know whether the jury will pay much attention to her.
Why is that?
Because Like me, she works in the saloon.
Exactly. What kind of work does she do in the saloon? Is she a...
She's a whore. That's what you're asking, but she's a good, honest woman.
Oh, it doesn't really make that much difference how good and honest a woman she is. I'm afraid you're right. The very fact that she is a whore will more than likely cause the jury to give little weight to her testimony. We're gonna have to find someone else.
There isn't anyone else.
I should have stuck with my first premise. I've been around long enough to know that no matter what you might think, there really is no such thing as a clear-cut case.
Deputy Wilson looked up from his desk as the four men and one woman came through the front door of the jail.
What's going on here? You can't come barging in like this! What do you think you're doing?
Pearly!
Cal, Smoke, Sally, I knew you'd come.
You could thank Lenny here. He's the one that told us.
I do thank you, Lenny. I haven't known you long, but you are a true friend.
I told you, you can't come in here. There's only certain times you can visit a prisoner, and this here ain't one of those times.
You're wrong, Deputy. As this young man's lawyer, I can visit him anytime I want in order to establish his defense.
All right. Maybe you can. But who are all these people? They can't be here.
You are wrong about that as well. They're all helping me construct a case for the defense.
All right. Go ahead and have your visit. But I'll be keeping an eye on you.
Sally stuck her hand through the bars and ran her fingers over the entry wound scars that were left on Pearlie's cheek by the shot.
Oh, Pearlie, Lenny told us you had been shot. Do the wounds hurt?
To tell the truth, I didn't even feel them when they hit me first. But after a while, they commenced to stinging a bit. Now, though, they don't hurt none at all.
How did you wind up here in Santa Clara, of all places?
Well, sir, I was coming back home is what I was doing. I was coming back to my old job. That is, if you'd be willing to take me back.
Of course we would take you back. We would have taken you back 5 minutes after you left.
Well, 5 minutes after I left, I almost turned around and come back. It would have been better if I'd done that, because if I had, I wouldn't be in all this trouble now.
Don't worry about it, Pearlie. We'll get you out of here. I promise.
Really? I wish I could be sure about it. Perhaps you didn't see the scaffold they're building?
I saw it. It's practically in the center of town. You can't miss it.
I don't figure they'd waste their time building something like that if they didn't have no intention of using it.
They can have all the intention of using it they want. I'm telling you right now, that scaffold is not going to be used. At least not for your necktie party.
I figured if I could just get you here in time, everything would all work out.
This is Tom Murchison. He's going to be your lawyer.
Well now, my own lawyer. How about that? That makes me feel like a big shot.
When is the trial?
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow? Impossible. I can't possibly prepare a defense by tomorrow.
You damn well better. Judge McCabe will be coming in tonight, and he don't like waiting around. Yes, sir. We'll have your friend tried, convicted, and hung by sundown tomorrow.
You had better hope he isn't found guilty.
What do you mean I had better hope he isn't found guilty? Hell, I want the son of a bitch to be found guilty. I like hangings, and I can't think of anything I'd rather see than your friend here dancing from the end of a rope.
If it happens, you won't see it.
The hell I won't! I'll be a-standing right there in the front row.
You won't be standing anywhere.
Why do you say that?
Because if Pearlie is found guilty, I'll kill you.
What? Did you just threaten me?
That was not a threat. That was a promise.
What?
Go away. Go over to the desk and sit down and let us conduct our business.
Look here! I'm the law. You can't talk to me like that.
Smoke, let's don't wait. Let me kill him now.
You are going to hear about this.
Not until he was out of earshot did they resume their visit with Pearlie.
Pearlie, have you been eating all right?
Yes, ma'am. You can't believe how good I've been eating.
Really? The jail feeds you that well?
Oh, no, ma'am. The jail don't have nothing to do with it. No, ma'am. The reason I'm eating good is because of Lenny's ma, Mrs. York. Mrs. York and Lenny's friend Mary Lou, both of them been bringing me food for near about every meal. Good food, too. Smoke, have you met Mrs. York yet?
No, not yet.
We're going over there from here, and I'm going to introduce them to her. We thought you might be worrying about whether or not we would get here in time, so we came here first.
You damn near didn't get here in time. One more day and I'd have been a goner.
Don't lose faith, Pearlie. We will get you out of here.
Oh, I ain't worried about it now. I got no doubt this'll all be behind me soon. Though I confess that being able to see that scaffold just by looking out the window was a bit,
Well, let's just say it was putting me off of mine.
When Smoke, Sally, Cal, Murchison, and Lenny left the jail, they went directly to Kathleen's kitchen and boarding house where the young man's mother greeted her son with a welcoming hug.
Ma, I want you to meet these folks. They're all Pearlie's friends. This here is Mr. and Mrs. Jensen, and this is Mr. Murchison. He's the lawyer who's going to get Pearlie out of jail.
How nice to meet you. I can see how Pearlie would have a lot of friends. In the short time I've known him, I found him to be one of the nicest and most gracious young men I've ever met.
Thank you. We think so as well.
I told you you would like him, Ma.
So you did. And you must be Cal.
Yes, ma'am, I am. How come you know that? Lenny didn't say my name.
He didn't have to. Pearlie has spoken well of you. He considers you his special friend, and he told me all about your silver hat band.
Yes, ma'am. Well, I loaned it to him is what I done, because I know he would bring it back to me, and that way he wouldn't stay gone forever. Of course, I didn't count on him winding up in jail or nothing.
Ma, none of us have eaten yet, and we're very hungry.
Oh, forgive me for not asking you earlier. Please, please, sit down, and I'll have your lunch out here right away.
I want to thank you, Mrs. York, for taking such good care of Pearlie.
Oh, please, call me Kathleen.
Only if you call me Sally. Pearlie told us about the food you have been taking to him. From the way he described it, I am very much looking forward to the meal.
I hope you aren't disappointed.
I'm sure we won't be.
Did you make chicken and dumplings today?
Yes, we did.
I figured you would, this being Wednesday. You always make chicken and dumplings on... I'm sorry, we?
What?
You said, yes, we did. What do you mean, we?
I've hired some help.
Really? Well, I'm real glad you did that. You work too hard. You don't need to work as hard as you do.
Kathleen smiled as she went into the kitchen. A moment later, she came out carrying a tray filled with plates. Behind her, also carrying a tray... was Mary Lou Culpepper.
Mary Lou! You're working here now.
Your ma hired me.
How is it going?
It's going really well. Mary Lou and I are getting along just famously, aren't we, dear?
Yes, ma'am.
Kathleen, I see that this is a boarding house as well as a restaurant. Is it for long-time boarders only? Should we go get a hotel?
Oh, you don't want to go to the hotel. That is, unless you want to do business with Pogue Quentin. He owns the hotel. You can stay right here. I have two very nice rooms, one for you and Mr. Jensen, and one for Cal and Mr. Murchison. That is, if you two don't mind sharing a room, and we have a very nice drawing room where you can relax.
I don't mind sharing a room if Cal doesn't.
After showing them to their room, Sally stayed back to visit with Kathleen and Mary Lou, while Smoke, Cal, Lenny, and Tom Murchison walked down to the New York Saloon.
Hey, Lenny, it's good to see you back.
Hi, Mr. Gibson. These are Pearlie's friends, Smoke Jensen and Calvin Woods, and this is his lawyer, Tom Murchison.
Pleased to meet you.
Also present in the bar were Lloyd Evans, Elmer Brandon, Doc Patterson, and Deckard. Lenny introduced them as well.
I suppose you know that Mary Lou isn't working here anymore.
Yes, sir. She's working for my ma now.
I ought to be angry with your mother for taking her away from me, but I'm not. Mary Lou's a good girl who fell on some hard times. I hope things work out for her.
I do, too.
So Pearlie has a lawyer, does he? I don't reckon that's going to make Poe Quentin all that happy.
Oh? Does Poe Quentin not believe in the right of the accused to have counsel?
Oh, I reckon he is all right with it in principle. He's just not that happy with it in fact, when the lawyer's defending the man who killed his son. Especially if the lawyer's from out of town and not controlled by Quentin.
Are all the lawyers in town controlled by Quentin?
The lawyers and the law.
Why does the town put up with that?
I reckon because he owns everything in town.
He doesn't own my saloon.
He damn sure doesn't own my newspaper.
He doesn't like that either. Sometimes your articles get him pretty upset.
Freedom of the press, gentlemen. It is the most precious of all our rights, and as long as I own this newspaper, and that will be as long as there is breath in my body, I will be a voice crying out in the wilderness against the evil oppressor.
Spoken like a noble patriot.
There he is!
Looking toward the swinging bat doors, they saw Marshal Dawson and Deputy Wilson. Wilson was pointing at Smoke.
That's the one who said he was gonna kill me!
What's your name, mister?
Jensen. Smoke Jensen.
The Smoke Jensen?
That's an interesting question. I'm the only Smoke Jensen I know. So I suppose you could say that I am the Smoke Jensen. But I don't know for sure.
What difference does it make who he is? I told you, he said he would kill me if we hung Pearlie. Well, there he is, just standing there. You ain't gonna let him get away with that, are you? I am an officer of the law. He can't talk to me like that. Well, ask him. Ask him if he said he was gonna kill me if Pearlie got hung. Ask him.
Do you really want to ask that question?
No, I don't intend to ask the question. Let's go, Wilson.
What? We're just gonna leave and do nothing?
Yeah, we are just gonna leave and do nothing.
I'll be damned. I never thought I'd see anything like what just happened. As a matter of fact, I'm not sure what just happened. Mr. Jensen, step up to the bar. You and your friends can have a drink on the house.
Hell, Rodney, does that include us? We just made friends with Mr. Jensen.
Yeah, that includes everyone.
As the men stood along the bar waiting for the drinks to be served, Lenny spoke up.
Doc Patterson and Mr. Brandon were playing cards with Pearlie and Billy Ray when everything started.
Good, good. Maybe I can convince you to be a witness for the defense.
It won't do you any good. Doc and I left before the shooting. We didn't see a thing.
What about you, Mr. Deckard?
I wasn't actually playing cards then.
No, but you were sitting at the table watching us play.
You saw it, didn't you? You saw everything.
I ain't going to testify.
Why not?
You don't understand. You don't live here. None of you do. You think this is just a trial like any trial in any other town, but it ain't. This trial has already been held, and Pearlie has already been found guilty. Don't you understand that? He has already been found guilty. The jury, the judge, even the court, they don't mean a thing. The only thing that means anything in this town is Pogue Quentin.
Mr. Deckard, I know you've seen the gallows in the middle of the street down there.
Well, how can I not see it? The whole town has seen it.
Are you willing to watch an innocent man hang just because you're afraid to testify?
I'm not afraid to testify.
Oh?
All right, maybe I am afraid. But if I thought it would do any good, I would testify anyway. It just won't do any good, that's all.
Wait a minute. Maybe my testimony would do you some good after all. I mean, Gibson saw how it all ended. Doc and I saw how it started. I guess we could testify about that.
Hold it, Alma. Don't count me in on that.
Doc, you saw how it all began, same as I did. You could be a witness.
If I don't know any more than you do about it, what good would my testimony be?
You afraid to testify, Doc?
It's not that I'm afraid, but I'm a veterinarian. I see maybe 10 or 12 dogs and a couple of cats that are pets in this town, and I see 30,000 head of cattle that belong to Quentin. I can't make a living just by tending to people's pets.
I see your point. He's right, Mr. Murchison. Even if he does testify, he won't be able to add to anything I might say. And testifying could cost him his livelihood.
All right. I guess we can get along without your testimony.
Thanks.
Damn. I wish the trial was a couple of days from now.
Why is that?
I could write an article about it. I could write an article and remind people of their civic duty.
Half an hour later, Brandon stood in his newspaper office looking at the Washington hand press that loomed in the shadows. Walking over to it, he ran his hand across the top arc of the press, the metal feeling cool to his touch. He looked over at his type trays, then smiled.
Why the hell not? What do you think, Emma?
He looked up as if speaking to his late wife.
I'll put out an extra. But I've never done it before, but I can't think of a time when there's ever been more of a reason for one than now. Yes, sir, an extra edition.
Holding a lit match to the wick of a nearby kerosene lantern, Brandon turned up the light, then started setting the type. Half an hour later, he took the first sheet off the press, then held it up for a closer examination.
Here it is, Emma. Yes, sir, this will shake them up.
The sun was not even up the next morning when Marshal Dawson showed up on Quentin's front porch.
Dawson, what are you doing here? What time is it? It's not even 5 o'clock yet.
Well, I thought you might want to see this.
Dawson held out a copy of the newspaper.
A newspaper? Why the hell would I want to read a newspaper at this time of morning?
Just read it. You'll see why.
Quentin gave Dawson the candle to hold, then using the small bubble of golden light cast by the candle, he read the paper. Not until he was finished did he talk again.
Where did this come from?
It was pushed under the door at the jail. Must have been around midnight last night. I never saw it until this morning. What I don't understand is how it got there. This isn't the day the paper comes out.
This isn't a regular issue. It says here that this is an extra. That means a special paper printed at a time that isn't normal. I wonder how many copies he printed.
Looks like he might have printed enough so that every man, woman, and child could have his own copy. As I was riding out here this morning, I seen them lying all over the place, on porches and wagons. There was a pile of them down at the train station and another bunch at the stage depot.
And you didn't think to go gather them up, did you?
No, I didn't think about doing nothing like that. I reckon I could do that when I go back.
It's too late. By the time you get back, the people in town will be waking up. Within an hour, I expect just about everyone in town will have read it.
I expect so.
Why did you let him do it?
Well, in the first place, Mr. Quinn, I didn't know he was going to print the thing. And in the second place, how was I going to stop it anyway? I mean, it ain't against the law to print a newspaper.
In Santa Clara, the law is what I say it is.
Well, yes, but...
There are no buts. I own the law, and I own you, bought and paid for. And I intend to get my money's worth.
All right. What do you want me to do about the paper?
Nothing. It's too late. The paper's out already. What I intend you to do is make certain the man that killed my son gets what's coming to him.
You don't have to worry none about that. That's going to happen.
Did you get Gilmore appointed prosecuting attorney?
Yes, sir. We done that all right. Judge McCabe got in on the evening train last night, and me and Gilmore met.
Well, it's good to see you aren't totally incompetent. What time does the trial start?
The judge said he'll start the trial at 1 o'clock this afternoon. I figure he'll have the trial over by 3, and we'll have that fella hung by 4.
I want you to go back into town now and make certain nothing happens to get in the way.
What could possibly get in the way?
That's what you said the other day. I didn't have anything to worry about, you told me. Then Brandon published this extra.
What is that gonna do? It's just a paper.
Have you heard the expression, the pen is mightier than the sword?
Nah, I don't know what that means.
I wouldn't expect you to know.
Look, I know you're mad, Mr. Quinton, but I didn't know Brandon was going to put out a paper like this. I mean, I never heard of an extra. I didn't think you could put out a paper except on the day when they're supposed to come out.
That's just it, Dawson. You didn't think.
You want me to put Brandon in jail or something?
No. I don't want you to do anything about him. I'll take care of the situation.
All right.
Quentin stood on his front porch until Dawson mounted his horse, then started the 5-mile ride back to town. After that, Quentin walked across the yard to the bunkhouse. Cole Mathers, his foreman, had a small private room at the end of the bunkhouse.
Cole.
Yes, sir?
You were in town last night, weren't you?
Yes, sir.
What time did you get back to the ranch?
About 11 or so.
Did you know about this?
Quentin held out the newspaper and Cole looked at it. He read a few lines, then shook his head.
First time I've seen it.
It was published last night. I thought maybe you saw it.
Nope.
Where is Cates?
He's staying over at Gillespie's house.
You mean my house?
Yes, sir. Well, it's your house now. What I meant was he's over at the house that used to be Mr. Gillespie's house before he left.
Go get him. Tell him I want to see him.
All right. Mr. Quentin, you sure you want Cates working for you?
Yes, I'm sure. Why do you ask?
Because I don't mind telling you. That creepy little son of a bitch makes me nervous.
Good. That's why I hired him. I want him to make people nervous.
Even his friends?
People like Cates don't have friends, Cole. You ought to know that. They just have a few people whose name they might happen to know.